In parenting, we're talking about how to help sporty kids deal with the psychological impact of winning, losing, and the pressures of competition. Melbourne-based provisional psychologist Darren Godwin works with Australia's largest sport and performance psychology practice, Condor Performance. Professional sports teams have the services of psychologists to help players navigate the ups and downs of competition and their own doubts and motivation. Darren says tween and teen athletes and their parents, can benefit from the same sort of assistance. Darren, kia ora, as we say, down under, across the Tasman, and welcome to 9 to Noon. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Catherine. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Really good. I want to make an observation at the outset, that is, we've seen, and it's become a source of some angst and debate, what seems like a growing kind of professionalisation of high school sports in particular. We've got schools with academies, we've got kids on training programs. I have spoken to some physiologists worried about the level of training that some are going through while their bodies are still growing and growing not always predictable ways. What's your starting point and what's happening in Australia with respect to the sorts of quasi-professional sport that kids are coming up against quite young?
Yeah, I think there's probably a couple of factors that can contribute to that. And one might be just that our world is more connected than it's ever been before. And so we're able to more easily access and see people that do incredible things. There are a lot of people that do incredible things around the world. And so perhaps that pushes or incentivizes us to start introducing that earlier.
Some schools compete on this basis, right? And it's not like in our case, you know, rugby and rowing and whatever haven't always been sports where schools have prided themselves or built their reputation. But this idea of academies and, you know, quasi-professional training does seem to have spread. It's just an observation. Is this what is on your mind, or is it more just in general for any young person playing competitive sport, they're going to come up against those highs and lows?
Yeah, I think it's more just a general sense of it. I think looking at sport, it really offers some unique experiences that I think can provide a lot of areas to grow and develop as a person. And I think there's a lot of parallels between just some of the uncontrollable nature of things that happen within sport. How can we develop skills that support and enhance people to learn, grow and handle those challenges life will throw them our way too.
Another general observation, you've sort of gone there already in some ways, another general observation is that we perceive to be having a generation that for various reasons is dealing with rising anxiety or has to manage anxiety. Your reference to just how interlinked everything is at the moment and the overload that can put on young brains and nervous systems is one factor in this. A pandemic interrupting their schooling and regular routine is another. But in general, is that on your mind also, that that resilience is something we really need to work on with a generation of young people?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just helpful to sort of acknowledge there's a mental skills component that we culturally don't introduce, I think, to a lot of sort of our younger audiences. And yeah, we look at sort of the systems and the education systems, facilities, things we've got set up there. There's more of an emphasis on the sort of the knowledge, the learning and the connectivity, but not so much on the mental skills development. So yeah, trying to build the capacity to, learn how we do handle those challenges and how we build those resilience.
So where do you begin? Let's just get some parameters around the kind of ages that we're talking about and what's appropriate and what's helpful at different ages and or stages of development.
Sure. Yeah. So in my experience, at least, we sort of work with anyone in between the ages of 10 and maybe the oldest I've worked with is 68. And so it can be for a variety of things. It could just be someone that is looking to be highly competitive. It could be someone that's just looking to just enjoy their weekend competition more. And so a lot of what we do to sort of support them is to help them with things like confidence in their skills and abilities, the confidence to execute what they've practiced in any given conditions, the composure to manage their emotions under stressful situations, and the commitment to trade off, I guess, what might seem like something that's hard in the short term, but it's going to provide a long-term benefit. And so when we look at those age brackets that you're sort of, the developmental brackets we're talking about, young kids, we're really just trying to sort of accentuate sort of the fun and keep them involved.
We want them to have fun, right? Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
We don't want to stress them out.
It's a social developmental. Yeah, it's a social period for them. They're trying to connect with themselves in the world. And so, you know, at a young age, we're sort of saying, hey, let's look at the fun side of things a little bit more. Teenage years, it's, you know, becoming a lot more social, but they're becoming a lot more independent. They're trying to figure out who they are and what they want to be in this world. And so that is typically when we start to see more competitive things show up. And still the same thing, it's I think, trying to help them understand what do they want to do that's going to help benefit them in the long run. And then sort of as we get to the more adult and later years of life, it's usually just about doing something fulfilling and valuable to them a lot more.
Let's come back to those three points you've already touched on. They're all interrelated, but we're going to break them down. Confidence to execute. That word execute, it's about doing what you've trained to do. But lots of things can get in the way of that, right? But I wonder if we should start with number two, which is managing emotions in stressful situations. And you'll often see this in young kids. You'll spot probably the champion at a very young age because they seem to manage to be calm. They seem to focus on fixing a mistake or concentrating on what they're going to do next. And then there's someone else who's angry, frustrated, and throwing the tennis racket. How do we begin to introduce and help kids with the skill to manage the emotions and the stress of competition? What sorts of things would you do?
Yeah, I think when we're talking about emotions, I always try to sort of explain it in two components. And one is sort of the internal experience that's happening with that emotion. What do we feel? And then the expression of that emotion, what do we do? And often with sort of younger people, when adults are kind of guiding them and we're actually don't appreciate or want to mold the sort of expression of the emotion, but then the younger person can interpret that as, but I can't, like that emotion is a bad emotion. I'm not supposed to feel that way. And so we try to sort of separate the two so we can, one, acknowledge and accept that, you know, you're a human being and it's okay to have all these types of emotions. They show up because, one, it's helpful for our survival, and two, something matters to us in that moment. We don't get emotional about things we don't really care about. So something matters to us in that moment. And so it's building those skills to acknowledge and understand and accept what emotion is showing up for me now. And then part two, how do I express? What do I want to express in this moment? And if you want to go one step further to what you sort of said is, you know, I'm here with a task in front of me. So how do I shift my focus to the task in front of me if that's what's most important?
So first of all, it's that old thing, as always, with young people, validate what they're feeling.
Absolutely.
There's also it's dubbed red to blue, isn't it? And athletes learn this at all levels. There's your immediate rage reaction or your stress reaction or your worry reaction, and you're wanting to get to the calm blue oceans part of the brain to deal with an issue. What are some of the ways you would deal with, you know, say an early teen or a mid-teen on the emotion in the moment? Like, is it a simple breathing skill, a calming skill? Is it self-talk? What kinds of skills can they add to their repertoire quite young?
Well, I think maybe, you know, a mindfulness practice is probably something that they can start to do. And mindfulness sort of being defined with two main points, one being a contact with the present moment and two, a reduction of judgment of what's happening in their experience at the moment. And like with all things, preparation is going to benefit this the most. So it's, you know, trying to help and guide athletes to practice these things in advance so that they're not left in a situation where they have to scramble and work out something on the fly. I guess a mindfulness practice is something that can be really helpful, and it can just start with, you know, a minute or 2 minutes of just observing and watching different experiences that are happening, tuning into one or some of our senses, what we see, smell, taste, touch, or hear. And that can often be a good way to kind of just recenter us back into this moment right now.
Let's work through perhaps the anticipation of a big event and the nerves and anxiety that can build over days actually ahead of that. Is mental rehearsal still a big thing? Does it help to just visualise where you'll be, what you'll be feeling, what you'll be doing, where your locker will be, where your gear will go? Is that something you can help develop as a skill as well?
Absolutely, yes. Mental imagery, visualization, mental rehearsal, it's a fantastic skill to help with our preparation. It's got numerous amounts of benefits. One is, yes, you're actually putting yourself in that situation repeatedly and becoming more familiar with it, trying to recall with detail the things that you want to focus on and where you want to be and what you want to do and how it's going to go, and that it be deeply connected to what you've trained and what you've practiced. It's very accessible. It can be done. If you can't make training that day for whatever uncontrollable reason shows up, it can be done in your home. It can be done alongside your training, which there's some good research to show benefits to do it alongside with your training. And it can be done when you're injured. So it keeps you connected with the task and what you need to do.
It can also be very basic. I mean, not necessarily just about the skills that you want to mentally rehearse. It can be like, okay, I got a stressful day tomorrow. I've got to be ready to go at this time. What time am I getting up? Yeah. I'm going to shower. I'm going to have my breakfast. I'm going to pack my bag, or I've got my bag packed. It can be walking through all the steps that, if they start to fall behind, can cause stress and pressure, right? It's the anticipation and practicing, yes, what you will go through.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and I think another point to what you said there is it's an acceptance, or it's a connection. We're not trying to avoid the stress that's happening the next day.
We're walking into it.
We're walking into it, yeah.
Mm. And so with nerves and anxiety, what ways do you talk this through with young people, that they are here to help us, that they can feel unpleasant, but that they serve a purpose? How do you help them harness them rather than be sort of overrun by them?
Yeah, I think there is just a little bit of education that, you know, comes along with that, which is just trying to understand the physiology, the biology that we have, and how our body works. And these things are ultimately here to help us. And then if you kind of break down, you know, what the actual things that are happening physiologically for us, things like our, you know, heart rate going up, meaning we've got more blood going to our muscles, which means we're going to be more ready to sort of use those muscles with strength and power and flexibility. Our pupils are dilating and we can see things more clearly and we can identify moving objects more easily. And that usually sort of that alertness, that energy in our body means that our reaction time is kind of consistently sharp. And so when you go through all of these things and you ask an athlete, you know, these kind of things that benefit your sport almost all the time, they're going to benefit their performance or their sport in some way.
It's going to benefit study and other things that cause us stress as well. How do you deal with negative self-talk? Some people seem to have a natural talent for being able to just, you know, turn things around, and others it's always, I won't win this, I'll get this far, I'm ahead, but I'm going to muck it up. Like, how do you talk through that self-talk intervention with people at this age?
Yeah, at a young age, I think it's interesting because they haven't necessarily had as much time to go further down that self-talk route and develop a habit or a relationship with that self-talk. So at a younger age, you know, particularly just trying to sort of say, like, there is a natural sort of tendency for us to see things in a negative way, and that's purely for protection purposes. So, you know, I might say something like, if we're going to cross a busy intersection and there's four lanes of traffic with cars and there's no lights and they're all going very quickly, we're going to think about probably what we would say is negative things. Oh, I might get hit by a car. Well, it's not a pleasant thing to think about, but it's a very helpful thing to think about. And so it's just trying to sort of start to build this relationship that sometimes as these sort of negative things come up, can we practice just identifying, you know, what's the context? What's this situation? What's happening for me right now? What's important to me right now? And then, you know, if it is important, okay, let's maybe pay some attention to it. And sometimes if it's not, we can just practice letting go. And it's that letting go part that I think is really important in some of the sporting contexts, because the sporting context trigger some of those things quite a lot.
Here's a really good point, actually, to this point. Like many kids his age, my 14-year-old dreams of a career in professional football. The chance of that working out is minuscule, but it's all he wants to do. He detests the idea of doing anything else. He puts so much pressure on himself to perform and is crushed if he doesn't shine on the park. Should I encourage him to chase his dream or be realistic? I'm torn.
Great question. It's tough, and I think for, you know, parents out there, it's really just trying to perhaps guide and go along with with your child and help them sort of discover it for themselves. There's, you know, it's not to say that they can't go down that path and then later find out that it's not something meaningful for them. But yeah, I think it's worth sort of also just continually having conversations with them. You know, what's important to you? You know, what are you willing to try to do to sort of see how this goes, and just try to be, you know, a really supportive and an open person to, you know, walk them along that journey with them. That's, there are going to be moments where it's hard, and I think it's, you know, we're trying to be there for them in all moments, not just moments of success.
What happens over time, of course, and, you know, a lot of athletes, most athletes find this out, is they want to be this or that. They're not going to make the professional league, but they may well have a very rewarding amateur or quasi-professional role. They may become sports psychologists or trainers or whatever. And it's about trying to keep focus on the joy of participation in the sport. Hard, I know, when they've got very specific dreams, but ultimately that's what you want to be constructive. And also the things you learn in chasing a goal, whether or not it's achieved. And I guess that's another point to discuss. It's the setting of goals can come to ones that you know you will tick off. I've done my training this week. I've done this. I've done that. I've done the next thing. And then those that are beyond your control. This is a really important thing to teach kids about effort in any area. You focus on what you can do. You reach for what's beyond your control, but you accept it's beyond your control ultimately, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think if there's sort of two really great mental skills to start learning early and they work really well all the way through the life cycle is that ability to identify what we can and can't control. And I think the tricky part happens is when we think we have more control over something than what we actually do. And it's often the case in sport, but yes, it's, you know, can be as simple as writing things down on a piece of paper and then actually just trying to gauge yourself, maybe out of 10, you know, 10, can I guarantee that this happens? One, it's a complete fluke that it happens. How much influence do I think I really have over these things? And practice that skill of trying to identify that.
I mean, you can have a goal of winning the tennis tournament to use that again, but what you need is the mental attitude that what you can do is all your preparation, all your training, all your readiness, your best performance. The goal of winning is what you are reaching for, but you're not going to control that. And that is a skill that really great performers will learn somewhere along the line. One more question before we let you go. Could your guest comment on how teens can manage trash talking during games, either from teammates or opposition? My daughter's experienced quite a bit of this during club football, audible put down, swearing, threats, etc. I know you're Australian, Darren, and I know there's a thing called sledging, but what do we want to communicate to younger athletes about this behaviour? It's basically don't let it be you, isn't it? It's rise above it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a tricky situation, I guess. I think just going straight back to this skill that we just talked about, what can and can't we control? Can we really control what other people say? No, we can't control what other people say. And so, you know, that gives us an indication about where can we try to redirect our focus. Let's try to bring our focus back to our own game. What's the task at hand? What have I done in my practice and what can I do now? What's my effort level at? That's not to ignore that can be a hurtful thing. I guess it's just trying to recognize that, you know, perhaps the hurt that comes from other people isn't necessarily a reflection of yourself.
It'd be good to turn it into something about their own kind of insecurity or whatever, but hard to do. Actually, practically, it's something to take up with coaches, especially with kids, take up with coaches and parents, isn't it? It shouldn't be the kids having to deal with it. Darren, thanks very, very much. Darren Godwin, who is with Condor Performance. He's a provisional psychologist with Condor Performance in Melbourne.